You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. This is my name, and reviewing Dolomite movies is my game, motherfuckers! Well, we had to throw that in there somewhere.
True. This will probably be filled with all kinds of profanity.
Yeah, that was the only one. If any of the rest of your cuss, you're fired. You've got to go. This is clean podcast.
We got one of you.
Motherfucking one of us. With motherfucking Chris. Motherfucking Alan. Motherfucking Sarah. And motherfucking Bob.
Yep. Motherfucking Frank, how you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Haven't had you on one for a little while.
It's been a little while, hadn't it? I can't remember the last one, but I've been meaning to, but my hours are changing now at work, so I can actually do more.
I was excited when you told me that.
Yeah,
I was like, all right, we get more Frank.
I know.
And you come out first.
Gemini Man tomorrow.
Oh, well, starting out first with Dolomite.
Oh,
Dolomite is my name, which is what we're here to review, which, of course, is a Netflix produced. And don't get nervous, because I know Netflix has produced a lot of crappy movies along the way. In a limited theatrical release film starring Eddie Murphy. Also, don't get nervous, okay? I know it's been a long time since Dreamgirls.
It's been a long time since Eddie Murphy has made me want to do anything, but this, like, he and Netflix and all the people involved seem to have thrown their weight really firmly into this. They're wanting to break down a door.
And if you don't know who Dolomite is, he was a character that was assumed by comedian musician Rudy Ray Moore in the 70s, who, after a burst of late in his career success, when he decided to take on this pimp-like exaggerated character of Dolomite, decided, well, that's not good enough. I want to make movies. And he didn't know how to make movies.
Yeah.
So he just did the best he could with what he
could. But to be fair, it was the 70s, so it was a lot easier to make movies.
You've seen some of those 70s movies?
Yeah. The standards were not what they were today.
That would not pass muster.
Well, there was also a huge market for B, C, and even D movies.
Yeah.
Because they had all of these, you know, they had a lot more, duplex theaters that they needed to fill up with shit.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. You could buy a house. You could buy, like, a, you know, movie house for a night.
Well, explain it in one scene in this movie. It's like, well, the white people moved out to the suburbs, and now we have, like, a more urban community in the cities that have these sort of broken down theaters but are still there and running, but they don't want to go see movies with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine.
It was pre-gentrification. So that's why you got so many exploitation movies in the 70s. It was the heyday.
Yeah. And so Eddie Murphy playing this role, who was like almost like he's been waiting his whole career just to take this role.
It does.
He is engaging and likable, and everyone kind of generally, despite his character of Dolomite, who's like very abusive and like just like he's kind of a narcissistic monster. The movie presents Rudy Ray Moore as this genuinely sweet guy.
If it's even a fault, he really wants to be famous, and he's come so close so many times. He kind of had a music career that almost got off the ground. He's been doing comedy and, you know, like, music and comedy for a while, and nothing's really panned out when this thing starts, and he's working at a record store and, like, emceeing on the side. When he has this great idea, you know, this like kind of homeless bum comes into the record store and like starts, you know, spewing off this kind of, you know, braggadocious rap. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember like all the old winos in my neighborhood. Everybody, you know, used to know the Richard Pryor's Mudbone character that would, you know, stand in the corner and just talk shit and have like all of these kind of made up mythological stories that went all the way back to slavery. And he's like, man, what if somebody recorded these guys and like really fleshed it out and you know, put some comic timing in and made it an act. And that's what he does. And it goes off like gangbusters.
Yeah. So he's joined by he's already friends, but people were like, see right off the bat, holy shit, he really hit on something here. You have Mike Epps and Craig Robinson and Titus Burgess, who are like wow, you are, yeah, we're going with you for this ride,
yeah,
and see where it leads. But, you know, I mean, the first half of the movie is really just the comedy career part, and then he's like, yeah, I want to make a movie. That's what we were waiting for.
Yeah, exactly. It took a little while to get there, but it's still such an enjoyable ride on the way there.
And the first hour really goes off in a clip because, as he says later, he's like, I know this shit. I know nightclubs. I know comedy. I know the music biz. I know how to fuck with record labels, you know. And so, you know, even though he's kind of finding this new shtick, he's really able to manipulate it into a point where he becomes this, like, you know, overnight success within black underground culture. And then he gets this idea of like, hey, I want to make a movie, but neither he nor anybody else knows what the fuck they're doing. And that's where you get the second part of this film is him, like, really, like, in a very comedic way, like, you know, stumbling through making an exploitation flick.
Yeah, and you can't help but compare it to The Disaster Artist, mm-hmm, or Ed Wood. That, like,
much.
Both of them are about people that you're like, they're really an odd person, but they're likable. And you see their the charm of it is just their vision, even though you know it's never going to be what they thought. The difference here is, this guy made movies that actually were, in their way, quite successful.
Well, it's like, at the right time and place. You know, I think it's the gusto that he had with it as well. It's just like, hey, man, that carried. I think that's what carried everybody.
Although the movies are, famously terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're funny to watch, but I can't imagine wanting to watch them without a whole crowd of people at a theater.
And that's kind of what it is. Like, it starts out when he, you know, when they do actually get the movie, like, in the can, they can't get anybody to distribute it because, you know, it's full of swearing and tits, and it's kind of an action movie, but not really.
It's weirdly gory at parts.
It's weirdly gory, and yet it has, because he's basically throwing everything at the kitchen sink and, you know, seeing what sticks. And, you know, finally, when he gets to the point that, well, I've got this movie, I don't know what to do with it, a DJ, played by Chris Rock, suggests to him, like, hey, man, why don't you just, you know, go to a theater and show the motherfucking thing?
Right.
And so he, a process called four-walling, which is where you pay the theater for the privilege of showing a movie, but you get to keep all the box.
Right.
And that's what happens, and all of a sudden it becomes kind of this underground Rocky Horror Picture Show type of phenomena. And then the distributors start looking at his number, and he's like, holy shit, he's selling out like 90% of 98% of the house.
Right. And so the other good part about the second half of this film, the first, like I said, totally agree. First half, solid, funny, does a great job of easing you into getting to know the main characters. But then the second half introduces a whole bunch of new characters. And here's where the movie for me went into just perfection overdrive. And that I'm going to chalk that up almost entirely to Wesley Snipes, who gives what is not a Best Supporting Actor nomination this year. It's just a crime because it is the best performance I've ever seen Wesley Snipes give, and it's hysterical.
He's just so amazing.
Yeah, he's like the one guy who's actually acted before in real movies, and
he carries that with him as well. Yeah, into the room.
And they get him to be in it.
They kind of con him because they're like, well, you can direct. And once he starts directing, he's like, oh shit, nobody knows what the fuck is going on, because the most professional people in the room are like, you know, five students that they hijacked from UCLA film school.
This Keegan-Michael Key plays the writer, who's a very sort of like I graduated from a proper college and I write real stuff about the black experience at a local community center. And he somehow manages to charm him into writing this thing. And there's a scene that perfectly illustrates those two characters where it's like, how could you do this? How could you take my words? I wrote this beautiful romantic scene for this I worked so hard on it and you just did this. And Wesley Snipes goes, yeah, but it was fucking funny, motherfucker. Which is a moment you're just really dying laughing watching this.
Well, not only that, but
serious, and so egocentric while he's saying it, too.
He's kind of parodying himself for being, you know, because one of the reasons we haven't seen Wesley Snipes lately is because he started to develop this, you know, reputation as being a prima donna and being really weird and, you know, staying in his trailer and smoking massive amounts of dope.
Not paying taxes, going to jail.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
my thought after like seeing what he was doing is like either he is being the most self-aware man on the planet right now, or the least self-aware. But either way, it works.
There's a lot of self-deprecation going on in this movie, I think, from all the famous actors. I think Eddie Murphy's really setting up his own image in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, this is a strong shot across the bow to for Eddie Murphy's return of his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, God knows he dug himself into a hole I thought he could never extricate himself from. I mean, one just atrociously bad film after another, saying things that were kind of questionable in interviews. And then right before this comes out, he does a statement about, like, I'm not with those guys who are saying, like
Tommy is dead. You can't say things anymore.
Yeah, it's blah, like, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't agree with you. I think you can have it both ways. And I apologize for all the horrible shit I said on my albums in the 80s.
Yeah,
and I'm like, wow, I did not see that coming, and I think everyone's about ready to welcome Eddie Murphy back.
He does some subtle and not so subtle things in this movie that you're like, oh wow, you are, you know, kind of embracing the new century finally, and you know that he's a lot like Rudy Ray Moore in that he's not really supposed to be playing a sexy leading man anymore. And this seems to be an acceptance of that, and you know, hopefully, like, you know, the curtain raising on a third act, because man, I've missed Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's a funny motherfucker, and when he is on his game, holy shit, you know. And this is what's in many ways the best thing about this movie is you get to see fucking Eddie Murphy on his fucking game, and he's great.
Well, for the sake of my wonky recording equipment right now, let's go ahead and go to final thoughts, Sarah. Why don't you get us started?
This is actually the second time I've seen it, and I love it. I agree with you about Wesley Snipes. I think he should absolutely get a Oscar nom. And I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 motherfuckers.
Brian?
You know, I'm just like so like gobsmacked by like how great the screenplay was. I think it is so brilliant. It is so comedically, you know, just pitch perfect. I just think it's really moving. Like, I was touched. I was tearing up, actually. I don't know why. This is an Eddie Murphy movie. You don't tear up at Eddie Murphy movies, but I did on this one. I think, what was her name that played Lady...
Lady?
Yeah. She was fantastic, and she's...
Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah, I want to push her forward for Best Supporting
Actress.
She's
terrific in this.
I think she's just so heartbreaking.
And the relation, the friendship between her and Eddie Murphy is kind of the soul of the film.
Yeah, there's so much tenderness in it. Yeah. And I want to push him for Best... I mean, God, he was just... This is just a really great film. It was hilarious. It surprised me in every turn. I know nothing about... My knowledge of Black Exploitation is like one of the really, really big classics, and The House on Skull Island. Skull Mountain. I love it too, yeah. But, this was just great across the board. No complaints from me. 9, and I don't even like Keegan-Michael Key. But...
He has not had as successful a career post sketch comedy as Jordan Peele.
No.
Well, that's a pretty high bar for anyone.
So I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 red limos because man, a red limo.
Bow.
This is. I've been waiting for this movie for a while. Not necessarily that I knew that I was waiting for it, but I've definitely been praying. It's like, God, have a long talk with Eddie Murphy and let him know that we miss him and he needs to shore some shit up. And he fucking like he's firing on all cylinders at last in this. The whole cast is amazingly great. The movie is, you know, especially considering its subject matter, so heartfelt and warm, and you really get behind the characters and root for them. And you know me, I'm really fucking hard on biopics. And, you know, I love this from beginning to end. It really doesn't make any of the wrong turns that biopics often make.
For one thing, it's not a rise and fall story.
Yeah, not at all. And I was so glad for that. I didn't want to see a life story by the numbers. And this is what you get. It starts in the middle of his life, and it kind of ends on a high point. I was totally happy with this movie. I hope it gets a lot of views. I'm going to give it 9 velvet flock fedoras.
Nice. I'm going to go buy one like tomorrow. I think that's going to be my new look. Do you know we get a good silver tip cane in this town? So I agree.
Chris, it's me. Of course I am.
That's fair.
Cane.
That's fair. Except you know, just know where you get the one with the werewolf coming out of it. Yeah, I thought this was tremendous. I had already heard from people who saw it at Fantastic Fest that they thoroughly enjoyed it. But nobody really established the point where I'm like, this might very easily make my top 10 of the year. Very easily. It's so thoroughly enjoyable. If you do get a chance to see a theatrical screening of this instead of just on Netflix, by all means do it. This is a great movie to watch with other people because it's one of those infectious laughter movies. Mm. It's just fun and you will laugh a lot.
Oh my God.
And it's just got great costume design. And I mean, like I said, it's like, it's all so exaggerated, hyper exaggerated, but super fun. It's really well acted all the way through. Everyone in here is great. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 times tonight. I'm going to go and listen to It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mentioned that because that's from Hustle and Flow, and this was the same director, Craig Brewer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What else did he make?
We all should have known that it was going to be good because it was Craig Brewer doing it. He did Black Snake Moan, which was awesome as well. He did Footloose Reboot, which I never saw, so I cannot comment on. And then he's actually doing Coming to America, which is the first thing I've heard that gives me hope for that sequel.
True enough.
So, fair.